Hey folks, this is Christian, bringing you another episode of the Ice Age Plumber Podcast. Today is Wednesday, November 22nd, 2017, the day before Thanksgiving, and this is episode 23 of the podcast, Mapping a Path Forward to Prosperity, Building Resilient and Self-Sufficient Communities, and Sharing Knowledge in the Grand Solar Minimum. Today, I'd like to start with a bit of an icebreaker before we get into some Grand Solar Minimum related news and a bit of a rant about Amazon and Jeff Bezos. Then I'll be featuring some of the daily steps that folks within the Ice Age Farmer community are taking to position themselves and their families closer to self-sufficiency, moving always in that direction, and then highlight some viewer feedback that I received. Before we do all that, and in the spirit of Thanksgiving, I would like to say thank you to all of you for listening and being a part of this show, for contributing to the Ice Age Farmer Wiki at wiki.iceagefarmer.com, for subscribing on Stitcher and iTunes, and for supporting the show via patreon.com/iceagefarmer. All of these are very much appreciated by me, and it is entirely because of you that I'm doing this show. In fact, let's go ahead and dig into the icebreaker, because it's related. This was sent to me a little story by Little Red Hen, and I liked it so much that I wanted to share it here, and I think Thanksgiving is the perfect time to do so. So let me just share with you. There was a farmer who grew excellent quality corn. Every year, he won the award for the best grown corn. One year, a newspaper reporter interviewed him and learned something interesting about how he grew it. The reporter discovered that the farmer shared his seed corn with his neighbors. "How," he asked, "can you afford to share your best seed corn with your neighbors when they are entering corn in competition with yours each year?" the reporter asked. "Why, sir," said the farmer, "didn't you know? The wind picks up pollen from the ripening corn and swirls it from field to field. If my neighbors grew inferior corn, cross-pollination would steadily degrade the quality of mine own. If I am to grow good corn, I must help my neighbors grow good corn." And so it is with our lives. Those who want to live meaningfully and well must help enrich the lives of others. For the value of a life is measured by the lives it touches. And those who choose to be happy must help others find happiness. For the welfare of each is bound up with the welfare of all. Thank you for that, Little Red Hen. I could not agree more. And that is very much why I'm here doing this show. And I think it's very true. And that's also why we speak so much about community here. Because it is as a community that we all will rise or fall ultimately together. And let's hope that it's by standing together that we are sufficiently resilient and pooling our resources together to get through this. Having said that, let's get to the news.
Now, lest you thought I was getting soft with all that talk of being grateful, and I am grateful, I want to start off with a new section, Grand Solar Minimum related headlines, with a look into the psychology of the masses. You know, most individuals I know are smart, intelligent, capable people. They're the kind of people I'd like to know. Well, some of them. But people en masse are stupid, and we are retarded, and the things we're doing are just unthinkable to this planet. I see that on my strategic relocation research. I see strip mines in New Mexico and fracking across the entire country. The things that people are doing are unspeakable. And that's why I wanted to take a look into this mass psychology this morning. What are we gearing up for? Just a couple days ago in Morocco, folks were giving out food. And I'll just read here from the New York Times. At least 15 women died and 5 were wounded in a stampede during a food distribution operation on Sunday morning in rural Morocco, government officials said. The victims were crushed as hundreds of people, mostly women, gathered to collect baskets of food at the market of a small town. According to news accounts, the town is about 40 miles from the coastal city of Asoria. In the aftermath of the stampede, clothes and other personal items were left scattered across the ground. It is unclear what led to the stampede. Well, I can tell you, it is the fact that people are unable to queue or get in line for resources. When you're hungry and your family depends on these baskets of food, then people don't behave rationally in these situations. And these are the kinds of situations that we're going to be seeing more of. And that's why I sort of reiterate from time to time, we look at these natural events and the occurrences because these are they're the symptoms of the grand solar minimum that continue to escalate. And that's both evidence of the grand solar minimum and data of what we need to prepare for. But B, because these are the increasingly frequent events that are going to trigger people. And that's what's dangerous, people to lose their mind and to stampede for food or to turn to ways of life, prostitution in this case in Venezuela, just to get food for their families. Things that were unthinkable, things that are now unthinkable, will be commonplace when more and more people are hungry. People fleeing the hospitals because of the Black Death in Madagascar. Roving gangs fighting for resources in Puerto Rico following, this is October 1st, but still following Hurricane Maria. The grid is still not up there. In fact, the private company that had volunteered to bring it back up has just pulled out as of 3 days ago. So there will be continuing problems in Puerto Rico. But I bring this up, and here's another, fighting for food in St. Martin after Hurricane Irma. Evacuations and looting en masse. The U.S., Dutch, and French governments are continuing to evacuate people from the Caribbean island of Saint Martin as reports of civil unrest and looting continue to emerge. The island, which is split between Dutch and French control, felt the full force of Hurricane Irma when it ripped through with Category 5. Many people were injured and killed. However, for those left behind, the situation deteriorated over the weekend when food supplies began to run out. Amid reports that law and order was disintegrating, the French and Dutch government sent troops to the island, and it just gets worse and worse. All the food is gone now, quote, 63-year-old Jacques Carbonnier told the paper. People are fighting in the streets for what is left. Why am I bringing this up? Just to make us feel even more grateful that we have food, hopefully, tomorrow to eat for Thanksgiving? No, I'm not trying to rub that in anyone's face. I am illustrating, as I mentioned, that people, when resources are scarce, cease to behave as they are currently behaving. The thin veneer of civilization is quickly ripped off when a mother's children are hungry. When a family needs to be rescued, people will do what they need to do. And right now, these threats to our physical security are rampant and myriad. And they are tearing apart the fabric of civilization, and behind that fabric is a dark place with bones and bodies, and we don't want to go there. So make sure that you have your own resources, that you are self-sufficient in a community of people who support that kind of endeavor and will be with you on that kind of a mission instead of looting you, right? That's why, among other reasons, the community is so important. And let's leave it there for now. But people are dangerous. I think that is probably the main thing that we need to worry about when we talk about strategic relocation. It's not as much these storms or the hail. It's the effects that will be felt by the people around you by these increasing storms and problems and earthquakes and how people will react. And indeed, as we just saw, they will not. It's not going to be pretty. Moving on. Bali, the volcano Mount Agung, finally erupting there after months of warnings and rumblings. In fact, it was just downgraded back to condition yellow because it had been rumbling and not actually erupting. But now, just yesterday, it popped off. Smoke has not affected air travel, so it's not as severe as it could be, but it's worth noting. Here's a shot of that erupting, and indeed some video right over here. pretty wild. Run, do not walk to the nearest exit. Let's move on. 134 earthquakes in northern central California, Monterey County, since last week's 4.6. The San Andreas is rumbling, and if you are on the West Coast, you need to be aware of that, and you should be prepared. You should be prepared for an earthquake and services to be cut off for a bit, if not making preparations to get the heck out of there. I'm not sure why anyone at this point, after reading John Casey's upheaval, would stick around in an area with heightened seismic activity under normal conditions, let alone during the grand solar minimum, when we expect to see that. And in fact, if I skip, I'd have to skip around here, but we just saw scientists coming out and saying that 2018 is going to have even more earthquake activities due to basically reaching the apogee of the rate of change of Earth's rotation. So Earth will have slowed down to its minimal rotational velocity, and that incurs additional seismic activity, which further amplifies the effects of the grand solar minimum. So 2018 promising to be a quite active year, at least in terms of volcanic and earthquake activity. Jackson Hole experienced record snowfall on Friday. Ski results there, resorts are thrilled, I'm sure. They're opening up early. The Big Wobble sort of does a mini retrospective here. The most devastating last 6 weeks on our planet. Good God. Saw 50 million people displaced over those month and a half. 5 hurricanes, 2 typhoons, 2 devastating earthquakes, unprecedented volcanic activity, and of course the massive wildfires. Not just those in California that we've covered here. And it's only getting started. This is the warm-up phase right now. So I think we can expect to see more. Dramatic floods in Indonesia. They've been having a rough time there, but this is just the latest incidents. 2,200, almost 2,300 people displaced, and 2 fatalities there. Storm Carolyn tomorrow on Thanksgiving Day will be dumping a month's worth of rain and snow. This, of course, dumping a huge long month worth of rain in a single day is characteristic of these atmospheric rivers, these atmospheric compression events that dump huge amounts of water and cause flash flooding and landslides. And, you know, there's basically we get to cover one or more of these events in every podcast episode we do because they are now so frequent. So heads up to those of you in the UK. I wanted to include this here because we keep hearing about these booms, 64 different locations around the world this year that are mapped here. And this is why I bring it up. Let me zoom in a little bit here. You can see that, in fact, most of them, while there are some up here and around, most of them are focused, in fact, on the East Coast of the United States, and then some in the United Kingdom, and a couple in Australia. So if this is a NATO project, it's hard to say, and I don't know. In fact, I would open an invitation if you have any ideas of what's going on here. Please let me know. The only feedback I've gotten from that so far is that maybe these are minor parts of a major asteroid that have broken off and are gracing us with their presence. I don't know. What do you think? Heavy rain again in Saudi Arabia. Look at that. Cars completely underwater, and the situation's pretty nasty there. Floodwaters, not exactly the kind of thing you want to be wading through to get to your personal property. But, and then I wanted to talk a bit about Jeff Bezos, about whom we have spoken previously, chiefly due to his investment, along with Eric Schmidt, in this company, Plenty.ag. Plenty.ag is investing, is the recipient of hundreds of millions of dollars of Bezos investment and others to try and master the art of vertical indoor farming. In other words, as we've said before, these guys are creating a new agricultural system. They have recognized, or they're being funded by people that are in the know, that traditional, modern agriculture is failing. Climate is changing faster than it's able to keep up, and it's unsustainable anyway, so a new model is needed. I would suggest, and I do suggest, that is a bottom-up model where you and I, all of us, need to be responsible for growing our own food and for forming resilient communities of people that are working together to ensure their survival, as opposed to this centralized model where Jeff Bezos owns everything, where he's got the Washington Post to tell you what to think, where he owns Whole Foods, where you buy your food, where he grows that food in this vertical farming indoors. And then, as this article points out, they are all over the place. Jeff Bezos or Amazon or whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it, is moving to capture some aspect of every part of existence. Stacy Mitchell, co-director of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, wrote that Amazon is, quote, trying to control the underlying infrastructure of the economy. And this is no surprise to technologists who are well aware that, you know, it's like 80% of the startup companies are using Amazon Web Services, which means that that single centralized man, that point of control, Amazon, and I think he's an actor, right? I don't think this is an evil genius. I think Bezos is just another CIA front, a creation by the deep state, like Bill Gates and others, to just to be a cutout, to be responsible for this line of business. You know, Google is there watching everything you search for. Amazon is here, aware of everything you buy. And they are now trying to pass this, I think it's an NDAA amendment, which would give Amazon exclusive control. Basically, they become the portal through which the Pentagon makes all purchases. That's a $54 billion market annually. Quote, this amendment looks like it will crown Amazon as an official gatekeeper to government procurement. Not even the source. Not even that they're buying through Amazon, but that they're buying through Amazon. Just like every dollar that the U.S. federal government prints goes through the Federal Reserve and is leased from them. These private companies have absolutely enslaved the people, and this is ridiculous. But I want to continue. I have called out before, and I will continue to call out that this company or this man or whatever you want to think of is happening here has totally purchased Whole Foods, the largest organic distributor, and is now actively trying to take over much more. That's great, Daily Caller. Thanks for. So here is more about from the Daily Caller about how they're trying to insert this amendment into the NDAA and control it, as well as a reminder that the U.S. Postal Service, which means the taxpayers, us, are already subsidizing every package Amazon delivers. About $1.50 per package is discounted off of the USPS rate, which means that we're paying for it. So, for those of you who continue to purchase things through Amazon, for you Amazon Prime members, and believe me, I know that sometimes you just got to go to Amazon, you can't get it somewhere else. In those cases, look, you got to do what you got to do. But I just want to point out that as good as it might feel for you to order your free 2-day shipping and get it fast, the true cost is not the cost of shipping there. The true cost is your freedom. And when you do that, you are feeding the beast that is actively enslaving you and is actively working to gain control over the production via plenty.ag of food, via the distribution of via Whole Foods of that food. And you just, when you see a man controlling that much of the economy or the food distribution of everything, you need to walk the hell away and withdraw your support. So I just want to point out the true cost is not Amazon Prime shipping. It is your freedom. Please bear that in mind and vote with your dollars. Before we get to the viewer feedback, I wanted to just mention some of the steps that I've been taking and some progress on some of the Ice Age farmer projects that have been kicked off and described before. While I am currently in North Texas with family, where I'm from, and also taking a look around at some properties with a different eye than I've ever had before, it's interesting to be back with a different perspective on how would this place work in the Grand Solar Minimum. I am thrilled, notwithstanding, to report that the crickets back home are basically having an orgy the last few days. They are laying like crazy. They're extremely loud. I was just reading up a couple days ago on how to harvest them and prepare them. I've added that information to the wiki, and I won't go into it here. I'm absolutely devouring knowledge from indoor cannabis growers. I highly recommend the cannabis Grower's Bible. I think there's probably a few different versions of it, but you can find a PDF. These people are really the best gardening minds of the last generation or two. They have taken indoor gardening to the next level, times four, right? It's out there. And so, based on my learnings there, I've implemented some changes to the moringas that I've been growing, including changing the lighting schedule from 16 hours to 12 hours to try and get them to think that it's fall, right? That it's time to go into flowering and start making some seeds. I also pruned all of the lower branches, since the inverse square law dictates that those branches basically aren't getting any of the overhead light anyway. This is something that they call lollipopping, where you prune everything but the very top of the tree. And that, again, is because you want that top of the tree, which is close and getting the actual light, to be where the plant is focusing all of its energies. It shouldn't be trying to maintain leaves and limbs that are just off, not getting any energy. There's no reason for that growth to be there if it's not getting any light and helping with photosynthesis. It's just excess. It's waste is what it is. And I've also been training my moringa plants. So if you look into the way that cannabis growers, I mean, there are, you know, as many different ways to do it as there are growers, and there are many. So there's no one, this is the way. But what I have seen a lot of is people that are, it's called training your plant. And so as it grows, you tie it down or, you know, there's already, definitely the people will trim the top of it off, just pinch off the top, which causes the growth to split off, just like when you do that with basil or any number of plants. But as well, it was sort of surprising to me that they would literally tie down their plants to make sure that the growth, all limbs stay at a basic vertical level. And this means you don't even have to trim off the bottom. You know, it's not as extreme as lollipopping. It's trying to force all of the growth of the tree or the cannabis plant into a single plane, because that plane is very easy to light effectively with, you know, with T5s or whatever, with artificial lights. The artificial lights have, as we just said, the exponential drop-off. So to get as much of that growth into an area that can be effectively powered, effectively lit, requires training your plants. And so check that out. And I will be doing a video and including much more information on I want to find out how it's going to work for the moringas before I do a video or make any recommendations. But that's what I'm working on right now, is I've got some moringas that I've started from seed a while ago and have been training to keep them tied down and growing horizontally outwards so that they will have their leaves all on the same level with the lights. So some really interesting learnings from those folks who have absolutely perfected and just really invested lots of dollars and tons of time into indoor growing. And I'm hoping to, if you'll pardon the pun, graft that knowledge onto vegetables and edible plants and all the things that we'll need to be eating and farming to survive. And some part of that might happen indoors. And so hopefully there's something that's useful that comes out of this research. If so, I'll be sure to share it here. All right, and with that, let's get in to your comments, viewer feedback from previous episodes and damage reports from the ground. What's going on out there? Let's hear from Bipolatelli, who reports that there is no shortage of flying insects in his area, which is Perth, West Australia. He's encountering flies of many species, mosquitoes, butterflies, moths, grasshoppers, native bees, beetles, flying ants, native wasps, European wasps, name it, everything except for honeybees, which there aren't so many of, unfortunately. So for now, as far as the insect population, Bipola in Perth, not noticing a drop-off. Max Rokotansky writes in with respect to healthcare. If you can afford it, you should stock up on silver impregnated bandages, absorbent medical pads, and that sort of thing. They may come in handy in the near future. And he is studying nursing. That's where this recommendation comes from. This is on the heels of our mentioning colloidal silver as something that could be used as an antimicrobial, antibacterial. And so apparently there are bandages and medical pads and these sorts of things that have silver built into them. So that's kind of a cool thing to know. It helps you sterilize while you're wrapping, etc. Horse 237 response to the episode about controlling aphids, and also on using this to supplement calcium and magnesium, he recommends adding bone meal to the mixture you are feeding your earthworms, not just for the calcium and magnesium, but because when they eat bone meal, earthworms produce chitinase, which repels and kills aphids by attacking their exoskeleton. It's a heck of a way to go. Thanks for that, Horse237. John Hopkins writes in, he's got a few comments here. Goat milk is more digestible and more nutritious than cow milk. And with their smaller size, you can have more of them, which diffuses risk. The main advantage compared to cows is that they can eat hay and silage that has some mold, although not a lot. Goats can die from eating moldy feed that wouldn't faze a cow. I like the general idea, though. Some crops that get ruined in storms, you might be able to feed to animals, though I think you'll need a solar dryer in the coming winter changes to make hay, and most people aren't set for silage. If you had a large group and resources, I would make an argument for silage silos dug straight down into the top of a hill and cows. Silage can keep for years with only minimal nutrition loss into a decent-sized silo. Not to mention that silage by its nature is already partly digested, and therefore you get more nutrition because it's fermented food. It's good stuff. John grew up on a beef and dairy farm and has kept goats for personal use, and he passes on a recommendation for how to construct that solar dryer. I'll put that into the show notes. All right, I also got a couple comments on the use of batteries for off-grid storage, which you mentioned in podcast episode 22. Diamond from the Oppenheimer Ranch Project noted that the iron nickel batteries from Iron Edison, while they work in sub-zero temperatures, they are quite heavy. So make sure that you are aware of their weight when you're constructing your rack for them or whatever that structure is going to look like. Bananas also points out that the lead acid batteries will release hydrogen gas. Important safety note there. Don't cross the streams. And finally, Kung Fu Manu makes the case that solar will be worthless, or nearly so, in the grand solar minimum. He makes a compelling argument, given volcanic ash, the decrease in solar output, the increase in cloudiness due to galactic cosmic rays, snow on your solar panels. It's absolutely true that you'll need to oversize your solar generation to account for these factors, or at least the subset of those factors that will affect you. But I simply disagree that they are worthless. I think that this is a relatively low-cost way. You know, there are plenty of 6-volt bubblers that you can use for great effect in any number of systems, and, you know, TTL level, like Arduinos, things like that don't require a lot of power, and they can be powerful in their applications as automation or other devices. So I don't think it's fair to say that anything is completely worthless. I do acknowledge that there are alternate ways to generate, and I welcome suggestions on that generation. But that is indeed why, you know, the interview with Rhodes from Iron Edison focused a lot on the storage, the batteries, and how to size that part of the system, because overemphasizing any one particular method of generation is, I mean, it's equally as flawed as depending completely on the grid for your power, or depending completely on your aquaponics for food for the rest of your life. You know, no single point of failure should exist in a robust system, and that's more true of our life support systems for our family than it is for anything else. You can't make bets when your family's life is on the line. That's the way I feel, at least. That's my two cents. What steps are you taking today to take your family and yourself closer to self-sufficiency, move even further into resilience? Let me know. Send me an email, iceagefarmer@gmail.com, or leave a comment below. And I'm looking forward to hearing from you so I can share out that knowledge, that experience, and that project, whatever you're working on, with the rest of our community here. We'd all love to hear from you. So get in touch. And with that, this has been the pre-Thanksgiving episode, episode 23 of the Ice Age Farmer Podcast. I hope you learned something and found something of value that you can take and share with your family over this holiday. Do me a favor and don't just stop at being grateful or thankful for your family and all the things we have right now, but actually go ahead and pay it forward. Take those daily steps, and perhaps while you're with family, let those daily steps be spreading the word about what's going on. You know, it's hard to go in the front door and just say global warming people are wrong. That's sure to just start a disagreement, and you're starting off on the wrong foot. I would perhaps suggest, although I trust you to do whatever's right for your audience, to perhaps try the back door and say, hey, given that we all know there were multiple ice ages before, I would suggest, in fact, that it's the sun that has been the primary factor. In fact, that's demonstrable in causing these climate cycles, in causing increased volcanism, and then temperature drops, and the year without a summer of 1850. I mean, this is history. This is real stuff. This stuff has really happened, and it is really happening. And it is up to us, who are aware of it, to spread the word to the rest of the folks who are just catching on, so that we can all be working actively to bringing ourselves, and indeed all of us together, into a better place, and hopefully preparing for a soft landing in this grand solar minimum and the times ahead. Please spread the word about the broadcast and support our work, patreon.com/iceagefarmer. And again, get in touch. Let me know how you're doing. With that, have a great Thanksgiving holiday, or wherever you are in the world. Have a great week. Keep taking those daily steps, and let's go build great things.